And I don't know if Skates is actually the perfect place for it, but it does jump out at me there. And it comes to do with the mortality assumptions and something that's done in a bunch of the fisheries we have. So I'd like to make a motion that the observer program add to the observer duties to report catch, and I need a little help with wording here probably, but to report the catch of any decomposed species or the absence of it. And if I get a second, I'll explain it quick.
Is there a second? Seconded by Jim Aubin. Any discussion? Phil.
Like I said, the version kind of put me off a little bit because, I mean, the concept here is, well, my thought process here is all of the fish they supposedly throw overboard dead, we have a different opinion on how they're counted. Or whatever, but in some fisheries they're 100%, some they're 20, 30, 40%. I mean, that's a little different here and there. But I mean, in the fishing business, the actuality of it is if you're throwing over stuff and it's dead and it goes to the bottom, if you're making the same tow, you catch it again. You know, maybe you don't catch it every tow, but you will catch it again. And you'll catch it again, you'll catch it again. We're somewhat near efficient in some areas of doing that. So what I'm asking for here is when you have an observer on the boat, that they note this, or they note that you're not catching them. So that as we go forward, the observer data would say, it wouldn't be really conclusive, but if I don't want to say dead because a lot of fish come up dead, but if you start to see a fish that's starting to go into decomposition, it's basically identifiable, and you'll be able to report, the observer reports would say, so if we're getting blamed for killing all a bunch of yellowtails that went overboard, that is 100% death, I mean, mortality on them fish, but you're making the same tows and you're not catching them, then there's something wrong with that picture.
Wouldn't a fish that's decomposed be dead?
That's the point, but if you say dead, a lot of fish that come up, and to me, the observer program would have a hard time if you just say dead because a lot of fish come up and ain't alive. So I'm saying if you're catching them in some sort of decomposition.
I see. Okay. Anyone else? Mike Leary.
Wouldn't the list of the absence of decomposed fish be pretty lengthy?
Anyone else? Jim?
Yeah. I'll make an attempt just to maybe clarify it a little bit. If we're towing in an area where people have been discarding a lot of skates, which can come out of this observer data, and you don't find any decomposed skates in that area of that matches the amount that was discarded, then you kind of have to make the assumption that the ones that went over the rail must have lived, or some kind of percentage, or you would have been towing them up dead. And the reason a fisherman can figure this out is that if you're fishing in an area where somebody's been harvesting skates, you'll catch the racks, and the same thing on monks. But you don't find this decomposed fish that was discarded that we're registering as being mortality. And it's just another way to start looking at it. It's not, I guess it is science, but it's if we're doing a lot of extrapolating on discards, and we feel like it's the mortality of some of these discards are off. And skates, I mean, they'll live on deck for 3 days and throw them overboard and they swim away. That's what he's looking for, and I agree.
Nancy.
I'm not sure I can really address what the concern is here, but I think maybe what, Phil, you're asking is, what are the criteria that we use to identify if something is dead? And I don't know the answer to that, but I can certainly find out. But, obviously we're using some set of criteria or a criterion to make that distinction. So I'm not exactly sure what this provides in terms of any additional resolution in terms of making that decision, but clearly we're doing it. So, I mean, if you're asking me what the criteria are, I can't answer that right now, but we have them.
I don't want to belabor it. I think I understand that portion of it, but from the observer reports I've seen, that it's not part of it. He might make a note. Actually, I have made sure the observer, if I catch a rack or something like that, I make him write it down. Then I make him write down if we don't, as that. And there's no line on your reports that actually does that at this point. So if you catch the racks coming back, I'm just asking we put that in the report. And if you don't catch it, there was none coming back.
Rodney.
Yeah, I think what Phil's trying to say is not everyone that falls off a boat drowns. That's what you're trying to say, right?
We'll try to document that.
Yeah, right.
David.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sympathetic with what Phil's trying to do here, but I don't think he's going to get any scientifically useful information out of this. I mean, if you want to study mortality rates of discards, the way to do it is to do a scientific study. You lower them back down to the bottom in a cage. You hold them for X amount of time, and you see how many die. Because a lot of times these fish, even though they flop over the stern, and whether it doesn't matter how they're caught, you see them swim away. I mean, I hear this all the time from people. Oh, I saw them swim away. They're fine. Well, they really aren't. I mean, they go 100 yards, and they keel over. And, you may not catch them again, but that doesn't mean they aren't dead. So, I mean, I think if this is the issue, what you want to do is, as part of some of your research set-aside programs or cooperative research, do a skate mortality study, as an example, using different gear types and, establish protocols to determine what is the mortality rate for discarded skates. I mean, this is fine, but I don't think it's going to get you anything that you can use to have a meaningful discussion of mortality.
Dave.
Yeah, I support what David said. I appreciate Phil's concern. With dogfish, for example, we were able to modify the estimates of discard mortality for dogs by gillnets and by trawls by doing the kind of research that David has just referred to. Consequently, that's the best way to go, as opposed to going in this direction where we likely will not get any information that will be translatable as to change estimates of mortality. That's my suspicion.
Anyone else? Okay, all those in favor, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 2. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Motion fails 2-13. I'm going to move on to SBRM. 5 minute break, or 10 minutes, whatever Mike needs.
F. Matt met May 15th in Gloucester, and the Mid-Atlantic Fishery Management Council considered the omnibus amendment. It's June 12th to 14th meeting, and Mike was there. The New England delegation didn't have anybody at that meeting. Mike has a short presentation for us, and after he does that, I will have a motion for the council. It won't be a committee motion because the committee hasn't met, so it will need a second. And we'll do our best to answer any questions after the presentation. So with that, Mr. Chairman, Mike.
All right, thank you. As Dana said, there's The actual final draft of the amendment, which was provided with your binder materials in the mailing. And then in addition to that, we've distributed a copy of the presentation I'm about to give you and a decision document which highlights the preferred alternatives within each element, which you may find useful as a reference as I go through the presentation and talk about each of the elements and the preferred alternatives and or as we consider the motion that will be offered. So I'm starting off the presentation to kind of catch everybody up to where we are and where we've come from and why we're here, because I know it's been a little while since the full council considered the SBRM amendment. The last, I guess, serious consideration was back in September when the council approved the public hearing draft. And there's been some discussions at council meetings since, but that was the last time that you saw the whole package. So just the first few slides are just to refresh your memory, but an SBRM is considered the combination of data collection and analyses that are used to estimate bycatch in a fishery, and that's from the evaluating bycatch document published in 2004. The purpose of this SBRM amendment is to explain the methods and processes to monitor and assess bycatch for all Northeast Region fisheries, to determine if the current methods and processes need to be modified or supplemented, to establish standards of precision for bycatch in Northeast Region fisheries, to consider the accuracy of the estimates as well as the precision of the estimates, and to formally document the SBRM that is established for all Northeast Region FMP fisheries. This is a joint omnibus amendment to all Northeast Region FMPs, which means it covers 13 FMPs from both New England and Mid-Atlantic Council. Those 13 FMPs cover 39 managed species. The structure for the development of the amendment up to this point has been a joint council committee, which had three members from each of the two councils, chaired by Dana Rice as representing the New England Council. Instead of a typical plan development team, we had a fishery management action team chaired by myself, but we did have members from the regional office, all the normal branches of the regional office, the science center, and staff from both councils represented on the FMAT. So we began in earnest the development of this amendment back in January of 2006 and spent the first three quarters of the year in 2006 developing the draft amendment. In September and October of last year, the council selected their preferred alternatives and approved the draft amendment for public hearings. I should mention that in August of 2006, the draft analytical framework of the document, really the heart of the document, was reviewed by members of both councils' SSCs as an external peer review of the technical components of the amendment. And the results of that peer review were incorporated into the draft amendment and incorporated and fully incorporated into the amendment that's before you today. In November and December, we held two public hearings and provided a 60-day window for public comments on the draft amendment. Then we spent the bulk of January through April of this year revising the document based on the comments that we received during the public hearings in the public comment phase. We had some really good constructive criticism of the document, constructive ideas, and we revised the document to account for those. We had the last time the SBRM committee met was in April, and it reviewed the revised document and selected preferred alternatives to recommend to the councils. So at that meeting, the committee wrapped up probably 90% of its business by selecting its preferred alternatives for each element, and I'll get into that in a little bit. Then since that meeting, the FMAT, based on some issues and some questions raised by the committee, completed the final draft of the amendment. And then this month in June, we were scheduled and are proceeding along with the councils to consider the recommendations of the committee and approve the amendment for submission. And the Mid-Atlantic Council did so last week, a week ago today. So the structure of the amendment, I'll just touch on this real quick. It differs a little bit from a traditional amendment. We do spend quite a bit of time describing all the fisheries that are, so we have background on each FMP that's to which the amendment is subject, and including the recent landings in value, describing what the concept of fishing modes, which are the operational unit for the SBRM. And it's a little different because most fishing modes, or many fishing modes, cross FMPs, but those are gear and area-based units that share similar similarities in what gear is used and where they fish from. And so Chapter 3 characterizes those and looks at landings, ports, the areas fished, and the number of vessels in each fishing mode that, as again, forms the construct of the SBRM. Chapter 4 evaluates the bycatch reporting mechanisms that are currently used in the Northeast, as well as around the country and around the world, and evaluates whether or not those, the ones that aren't currently used in the Northeast region, would or would not be appropriate to apply in the Northeast region. Chapter 5 is really the analytical or heart of the document. It provides the description and discussion of sampling design, techniques for estimating bycatch rates, the estimates of precision, analysis of accuracy, and basically provides all of the analytical framework, for the SBRM that we're proposing to establish through this amendment. Chapter 6 is more, you know, standard presentation of alternatives that the council has developed and is under consideration, including the preferred alternatives, non-preferred alternatives, and alternatives considered but rejected. And those are all fully described in Chapter 6. Chapter 7 is the environmental, the NEPA chapter, essentially. It describes the affected environment, the biological, physical, socioeconomic effects expected from each of the alternatives considered, as well as the cumulative effects. Chapter 8 presents the standard list of applicable laws and directives that each FMP amendment must address. And then there's also a glossary, references, and several appendices. In this case, the appendices, some of them are quite important and relevant, but given their nature, it was felt better to put them in appendix rather than further, muddy up the amendment document itself. There's a background document on bycatch estimation methodology. There are very detailed tables and figures from the SBRM analysis. There is a series of what we call importance filter worksheets, and I'll talk about importance filters in a little bit. There's a summary of the Northeast Fisheries Observer Program data flow process, because clearly data quality control is important to having high quality data when you're actually trying to do the analysis. There are all of the comments that we received both orally at the public hearings and in written form during the review timeframe, as well as responses to all those comments received. There is, at the request of this council back in September, there's an example SBRM review report, some bycatch-related queries, and most recently, as a result of the February meeting, a template for discard reports. And then finally, there's a section at the very end that includes the draft proposed regulations that would implement the SBRM as recommended by the committee. So the major revisions to the amendment subsequent to the public hearing process, there's, of course, the comments and responses, which is an important new section. There are some new elements basically as a result of the New England Council's discussion in February, as well as some of the comments that we received from the public. There's a new element on our new alternative for periodic discard reports, framework adjustment provisions, and industry-funded observers and set-asides. Those three were all added at the request of New England Council in February. And then also became clear during the public review process that being explicit about the prioritization of observer coverage in years in which the available resources are insufficient to fully allocate all of the observers that are determined through this process to be needed. So that is spelled out in the document. We've revised some of the alternatives under item 2 based on comments that we received during the public review process. We've also updated the analytical techniques in Chapter 5 based to fully incorporate all of the recommendations of the SSC review that occurred last summer. And then there was some minor document cleanup and clarifications, as we always have. And then lastly, we finalized the NEPA analytical section and the other applicable law sections. So this was the original, well, actually, this was the amended schedule, the most recent schedule that we're working under, and you can see where we are. Once we approve and adopt the document by both councils, we'll proceed into the rulemaking phase. If everything goes as anticipated today, we'll begin with rulemaking next month with a proposed rule expected either the end of July or into August. Then we would expect to publish a final rule in September, October, and the final rule would be effective 30 days later. So the alternatives presented in the document are structured around seven elements, and although these in totality, the seven elements together form the actual SBRM and the SBRM-related provisions that the committee feels are important, we broke it down into elements because some of the things were, it was more easily to consider these partitioned this way than to try to lump them all together. And I'm going to talk about each element briefly in turn. As I did mention in April, the SBRM committee selected or confirmed their preferred alternatives for each of the seven elements. Those will be highlighted as we talk about each. At the April meeting, there were two issues left unresolved by the committee, and they were looking for a formal recommendation by the SBRM FMAT. And those had to do with the importance filter threshold levels and the frequency of the review reports. Those issues were expected to be resolved at the next committee meeting, but because there was not one, we resolved those, discussed those in detail at the Mid-Atlantic Council meeting instead. And as Dana mentioned, the Mid-Atlantic Council adopted all of the formal recommendations of the committee and the FMAT. So those are now the recommendations of the Mid-Atlantic Council. This is sort of a matrix that shows you the seven elements, which are each row is an element, and in each column or block is an alternative considered under that element, and I'm going to go through each of these, but just as a reference, you can see kind of the complete picture of the SBRM that we're proposing. So element one refers to the bycatch reporting mechanisms that are used to collect data on discards, and the committee's recommendation is the status quo, all currently utilized bycatch information mechanisms. The non-preferred alternative would have been to implement an electronic video monitoring system to collect additional bycatch information. Element two are the analytical techniques to allocate observers. The preferred alternative is what we call the integrated allocation approach with importance filters. And the non-preferred alternative, starting at the top, the status quo would have been to continue the current process. That's actually what's detailed in Appendix A of the Rago et al. Paper. That's essentially the same process that we're using, but alternative two, what we call the integrated allocation approach, takes the status quo and expands it to all 39 species and all fishing gears, all 39 fishing modes, and all relevant species groups. And it's expanded and refined. What we've done with the preferred alternative is take that a step further and incorporate importance filters that were suggested by the SSC review to help us refine the observer allocations to eliminate fishing modes with negligible impacts. And within alternative three, we considered two options, or the council or the committee considered two options, the filters that were originally proposed in the draft hearing document and revised filters, or filters that were revised based on the comments that we received during the public review phase. And then lastly, there was another non-preferred alternative to incorporate or adopt minimum percentage coverage levels based on the type of species that are encountered in each fishing mode, be it a rare species or a common species. So I was going to touch a little bit on the importance filters because this often proves to be a bit of a tricky concept to grapple with. An importance filter is intended to refine the target number of observer sea days needed in each fishing mode to eliminate cases where the implications of the discards are minor. And the way to think of this is we calculate the number of observers needed for each species or species group encountered by a fishing mode in order to achieve the CV of 30%. And that's done without reference to the magnitude of the discards. But in some cases, the magnitude of the discards of a species is, in fact, quite small. And what we've tried to do with the importance filters, or what we've intended the importance filters to do, is allow us to eliminate the cases where the magnitude or the implications of the discards are really negligible or irrelevant to the stock of, that we're talking about. And that allows us to focus in and use the remaining highest level of observer coverage to set the allocation needed for that fishing mode. And the gray cell filters, the importance filters, really cover three things. The gray cell matrix, which eliminates the infeasible or infrequent combinations of species and fishing gear. Then the second filter looks at the proportion of discards of a species in a fishing mode to the total discards of that species. So we're eliminating the fishing modes that contribute a minor component of the total discards of a species. And I have an illustration in a couple slides that I hope will further explain that. And then lastly, we also filter out based on the proportion of discards of a species to the total fishing-related mortality. So the middle filter there, the discard ratio filter, basically looks at discards as a component of total discards of each species. And we use that calculation to derive the cumulative discard percentages for each species and species group, and we rank those highest to lowest. And I'm going to jump ahead to this graph because I think this will help illustrate this concept. So across the bottom are each of the 39 fishing modes, and what we've graphed as a cumulative percentage is the proportion that each of discards of each fishing mode of a particular species. So this is one species and how much each fishing mode discards of the total discards of that species. As you can see, if you look at the first few, that those intervals decline as you move to the right, and that's because we've ranked these highest to lowest, so most of the discards, roughly 38%, come from the first fishing mode. And then the next fishing mode contributes about another 15 or 16% of the total discard, and so on. And what you see when you do run this through is that nine fishing modes contribute 95% of the discards of this species. And the remaining 30 fishing modes, or 30 fleets, contribute the remaining 5%. And those would be considered individually as negligible contributions to total discards. And this is a way to filter out those negligible contributions of total discards. This is backing up. This is the same concept, but instead of using discards relative to total discards, we're looking at discards relative to total fishing mortality, which is the sum of both landings and discards of each species. So again, we're looking for cases where the magnitude of the discards of a species is really a negligible component of the total fishing-related mortality of that species. And the graphical concept is the same. Functionally, the way those interact or affect the observer sea days required, when you calculate using the SBRM methodology the number of sea days that would be required in each fishing mode, in the absence of any filters, you get the baseline number. And you sum those up across all fishing modes, you get 71,000. And again, this is using the 2004 data, which has been used throughout this amendment as a case study. These numbers are not intended to be locked in place, but rather reflect one single year's application of this methodology. The intent is that once we implement this, each year this methodology would be applied to the most recent full years of observer data in order to essentially roll forward the SBRM amendment or SBRM from year to year. So the numbers would change, but the approach remains the same. So you can see as we apply each filter, starting with the gray cell filter, the overall sum of the total number of observer sea days required would decline quite substantially as we start to apply filters 3 and 4, which are the two filters I just discussed. And then those, because they relate to a certain cumulative percentage, as you move to the right and set your threshold, from high down to low, it also has an effect on the total number of sea days that you would need. And the last page in Appendix C actually shows you this on a mode-by-mode basis rather than a cumulative basis. So the importance filter threshold recommendation, as I mentioned, was left unresolved by the committee. In April, I had briefed the committee that at the time the FMAT was proposing or likely focusing on ratios of 95% of total discards for filter 3 and 98% of total mortality for filter 4. But because of the way the FMAT meeting had gone in late March, we didn't come to a final formal recommendation for the committee. And the committee decided that they in fact wanted a formal recommendation before they would take action on the importance filters. So we arrived at that in May, and in fact, this recommendation remained the same, 95% of discards and 98% of total mortality. So essentially what this means is that we're eliminating or using as the filter the instances where the discards of a species contribute to the bottom 5% of total discards and or the bottom 2% of total fishing mortality. So certainly we're accounting for the vast majority of discards and mortality. Based on this application of the importance filters, and again using the 2004 data as a case study, the total allocations across all 39 fishing modes to achieve the 30% CV would be roughly 9,900 sea days. Now, this sort of bleeds into element three, which is actually establishing that performance standard. And the recommendation of the committee is to establish a CV of 30% as the SBRM performance standard. Element four talks about the review and reporting process. An important aspect of the SBRM is to be able to, A, have access to the discard data on a regular basis, so that the council can look at that information and take action when necessary, as well as to ensure that the SBRM is operating effectively and as anticipated. So alternative two, which is recommended by the committee, would require a periodic SBRM review report, and this is a backward-looking evaluation report to determine whether or not the SBRM is meeting its performance standard, and if not, in the cases where it's not meeting the performance standard, what the implications of that may be to either stock assessments or the ability of the council to make be confident in making management decisions. And then also preferred is alternative three, which would require an annual periodic discard report. And if you recall, this is what was brought up at the February council meeting. We started out at a quarterly discard report. That was amended to semi-annual. And the committee later amended that and recommended that the report be provided annually. The SBRM committee, or SBRM FMAT, recommended that the review report under alternative two be provided every 3 years. Element five ensures that the preferred alternative would ensure that changes to certain elements of the SBRM can be made through either a framework adjustment or annual specifications to each FMP, rather than requiring a full amendment. And the types of changes that would be eligible for such a change are detailed in the document. Element six deals, as I mentioned earlier, with the prioritization process for cases where or years in which the federal resources or funding are insufficient to fully allocate all observer coverage as output from the SBRM. And this provides a mechanism for the RA and the science director to develop a recommendation, or develop a proposed list of priorities for which fishing modes will be fully allocated, or how the resources would be allocated, would be prorated essentially across the fishing modes. And that would be based on things such as the needs of upcoming stock assessments, other applicable laws such as, so other mandates that the agency is subject to, such as MMPA or ESA, or other important priorities or issues such as the status of stocks or upcoming management actions. And the process calls for that recommendation to come from the RA and the science director and presented to both councils to give the councils an opportunity to consult on those prioritizations and provide additional input before those are implemented. The last element, again, was incorporated based on a motion of this council in February to provide a mechanism under Alternative 2 to establish an observer service provider approval and certification process for all FMPs. And we essentially took the proposed regs in Amendment 13 to the Scallop Plan and broadened those to cover all FMPs. And these would be implemented and basically serve as a placeholder for Alternative 3, which provides, as a framework adjustment provision, the ability of the Council to establish either an industry-funded observer program or in concert with that, a observer set-aside provision for each FMP. And again, just we're not implementing that or proposing to implement that in the CESA preamble. It just provides that, makes that a frameworkable provision of each FMP for future action by the councils. And again, this is the overview matrix of the various preferred alternatives within each element. As we've mentioned, the Mid-Atlantic Council approved the committee's preferred alternatives last week. And so what remains is for this council to approve the SBRM amendment, and then we would have a council submission of the amendment, and submissions in quotes, since I'm actually the owner of the document, so I'd essentially be submitting it to myself, but I guess a letter from the two councils would be useful. And then we would be publishing the NOA and the proposed rule in the July-August timeframe, making the final approval decision and publishing the final rule in the early fall. And it would be intended to be effective in the late fall. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll take any questions and we can proceed.
All right. Thank you, Michael. Council members, the chair and the vice chair have had to leave, and I'm on the executive committee, and the vice chair asked me to serve temporarily as chair for the remainder of this meeting. If there's no objection, then I'll just continue with the agenda, and hopefully we can conclude the meeting in a quick manner. All right, presentation from Michael. Any questions? David.
Yeah. Well, now I know why I didn't take calculus. I took it at 8 o'clock in the morning and not 5 at night. Actually, Mike, your presentation is quite clear. I understand your math and the slides you presented. But quite frankly, with the document, around in the area of pages 130 to 140, there are equations in there that I don't understand. And I'm not a multivariate analysis person. And so one of my question is, who has kind of verified the math there? Has it gone to the SSC, or what kind of review has it had?
Well, yes. As I mentioned earlier, what Chapter 5 represents is the analytical heart of this document. This is how the calculations are done to derive all the information that's then utilized in the remaining elements in Chapter 6. And that was prepared by a team at the Science Center led by Susan Wigley and Paul Rago. And that analytical component was what went to the SSCs in August of last year, the initial draft of that document. And actually, it was a formal draft that had already gone through internal Science Center review before it was released to the SSC members. But the SSC members, two from each council, did a technical review of the analytical document, made several recommendations to improve and tighten up some of the calculations that were done. And that was presented in a report from the SSC last September. Those changes were made to this chapter. And what you see before you reflects the SSC's recommendations.
Okay, so that alleviates one concern I had, because I don't think this council is basically able to perform some kind of review of that section. I mean, we don't have that kind of knowledge. So the second question I had was, you said you have a means of prioritization to account for a lack of money, basically. So I gather that means that in the event that observer funding disappears or dries up in some way, that you have a method of dealing with that other than turning to us and saying, now you pay for it.
Right. I think, you know, one of the important considerations given the court rulings that are driving this amendment development was that we not develop an SBRM that uses the available funding as an input. as was, I think, presented in at least one of the amendments that the judge looked at. So the SBRM, the actual calculations that determine the observer coverage level that should be allocated to each fishing mode, all those calculations are done without knowledge or without consideration of the available budget. So you may get a result like 9,874 sea days are needed across 39 fishing modes. And when you give that number to the observer program, they can turn that into what funding that they would need in order to allocate 9,874 sea days in a year. And if the budget that we're given from Congress and the President for observers is less than the amount the observer program would need to fully allocate 9,874 days, then someone needs to make the call as to how the available funding will be apportioned across the 39 fishing modes. And so what's described in the document is that process that would occur in those years where we have this external, operational constraint. And it's left to the RA and the science director to get together and looking not only at the needs of the councils, but also the needs of upcoming stock assessments and other legal mandates that the agency is subject to, such as Endangered Species Act and MMPA requirements, and develop a proposed or essentially develop a recommended prioritization, what fishing modes would get what allocation of their observer coverage. And then we've provided an opportunity for that to be presented to both councils for the councils and the public to provide some input and essentially consult on that proposed prioritization. But recognizing that the ultimate decisions to allocate those funds for observer coverage has to remain with the science director and the regional administrator.
Okay. And lastly, again, I'm kind of on that issue a little bit because having watched Congress over the years, my parents always warned me about unfunded mandates. And you know, this appears to potentially be an unfunded mandate, and yet on page 267, you say the only way for this element of this proposed action to have an economic impact on the fishing permit holders is if the participants of the fishery pay for the at-sea observers. In this case, an observer allocation methodology that resulted in an increased level of coverage could be said to impose additional costs on those participants. I would say that's a mastery of understatement. However, in the Northeast region, the at-sea fishery observer program operates entirely through a contract service funded by NIMS, and then it goes on from there. I'm still concerned with this aspect of the unfunded mandate. What happens if that money dries up? And I don't see that addressed anywhere in the document. Is it addressed, or have I missed it, or what?
Well, it's not addressed explicitly because we can't predict what will happen, and there's nothing in the document that suggests anything other than what we've just described, that we determine using the SBRM what observer coverage we need to achieve the SBRM performance standard. And if there's insufficient resources to do that, then we have to make some decisions to prioritize the available resources. The council certainly, and this document actually provides the opportunity for the councils to take actions in the future to develop and implement industry-funded observer programs like was done for the sea scallop fishery. And those may, again, so it will be up to the councils to determine this. They could develop observer set-aside programs, such as we have with the sea scallop fishery, to offset the cost to industry of paying for observers. But that, all we've done in this document is make those measures frameworkable so that if the councils determine in the future that they want to develop such a program in order to ensure a certain level of observer coverage in a particular fishery, that they have the opportunity to do that through a framework adjustment process rather than a full amendment. And that was the discussion at the February council meeting where it was suggested that that would be a more efficient process than requiring a full amendment for each FMP should the council's desire to do so in the future.
Okay, thank you very much.
Any further questions for Michael? David.
Yeah, Regarding the industry-funded observer program provisions, making that frame workable, the certification process, I was wondering about recertification and if there's enough in here to require that so that after some period of time, 3 to 5 years, you get a chance to look back at performance as far as, you know, targeted sampling by Strata and how well they achieve that.
I could look at that. I basically took what was submitted in Amendment 13 and made those proposed regulations generic enough to apply across all FMPs, but didn't add or take away anything from those regulations as they were submitted or as we ultimately implemented them.
Yeah, it just seems like an important piece because you don't have the same level of control that you would over your own sea sampling program to get those maybe more difficult to sample modes, more expensive to sample modes, and so on.
Pat.
Yeah, it's actually something that we can do at any point. And in fact, something we used recently for the certifications in the scallop fishery where we sent letters to because we were concerned about a lack of coverage in one area. So it's not something we've scheduled necessarily, but it's certainly something that is available to us.
All right, thank you. If there are no further questions, and Michael, we do have a hand in the audience, so we'll afford an opportunity for some questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gib Brogan with Oceana. I've just got a question about the SSC review of the document that you have in front of you. Mike, you said that last August the SSC reviewed this. Since public comment came in, has option B, isn't that where option B in the analytical approach came from?
Yep.
So it's not entirely accurate that the SSC has reviewed this document that's in front of us right now?
No, the SSC reviewed what is essentially Chapter 5, the analytical component, which speaks to how the data are utilized, how the calculations are made, and how the estimates of discards are derived and the calculations of CVs. That is the section that was originally intended to be reviewed by the SSC and was, in fact, reviewed. During that review, they basically had comments that split off into two directions. Technical comments that they found with the analysis and suggestions to improve that analysis, and some policy related suggestions that they made to the councils. And one of the policy related issues that they raised for the council consideration was this issue concept of importance filters, which they suggested be developed in order to help the councils filter out or refine the what would be the results of the technical component in order to more appropriately focus observer coverage on what's really important. And so I guess that's the answer to your question.
But the discard and the mortality filters that are in place right now, the preferred alternative, the SSC hasn't had a look at that.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Eric Brazer, Georges Bank, Fixed Gear Sector. I'll make this brief. I know it's the end of the day. I first wanted to say that I was very impressed with the presentation. It was very informative. But I really wanted to take this opportunity to say that I think we've made a lot of progress today with groundfish, with skates. I know a lot of progress.
Excuse me, Eric. Do you have a question for Michael? Because we'll have a motion on the floor shortly, and then you can certainly address the motion when it's appropriate. But right now, it's questions for Michael.
Oh, I apologize. I have no question. I just had a statement. I will make it at a later time. I apologize.
Thank you. David.
I guess my other interest is in the non-managed species. There wouldn't, you know, for example, northern sea robin make up 1% of the observed discards, I guess, and there wouldn't be, you know, an effort to attain a 30% CV in any given fishery there, but that information would still be collected on discards and presumably over the whole fishery, some reasonable estimate of fishery-wide, you know, across all fisheries, some reasonable estimate of discards would be available.
That's correct.
All right. If there are no further questions for Michael, I'll turn back to you. Dana, I understand that you have a motion to make on behalf of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a motion to make, but it is not on behalf of the committee because the full committee didn't meet at the Mid-Atlantic, so I will need a second. The motion is move that the council, and it is the same motion that the Mid-Atlantic Council made, move that the council approve the omnibus SBRM amendment for submission to the regional administrator for review and implementation of preferred alternatives. And that does need a second.
All right, motion has been made by Dana Rice and seconded by Rodney Avila. Any discussion on the motion? I see no desire to discuss the motion. Give the audience an opportunity to address the motion if you care to. Good.
Thanks once again, Mr. Chairman. My name is Gib Brogan with Oceana. I'd just like to compliment the process on this. We've come a long way since the council was in Providence 2 years ago, and we have a lot more information, and it's going to move the management process along, answering some key questions that have been lingering in New England and the Mid-Atlantic about observer coverage. But and we've got something that's going to set a precedent for not only New England and the Mid-Atlantic, but it's going to spread around the country. Gene Martin gave us this advice in Newport when this process began. This is going to go to the South Atlantic, most likely go to the Gulf, go to the Pacific Coast. And before this council approves this, I hope everybody understands that this is very important, not just for this region, and don't go into this one lightly. As far as the process goes, I've got some significant issues on how this has been developed. As I said in my question, there's been a change to this document since it went out for public comment. We got a comment both from the industry side, from the NGO side, from the general public about the document that went out for comment, and then there have been some changes that were made, and we don't know whether those changes are valid. We haven't gotten the review from the experts, and this needs to happen. This is going to shape the way bycatch information is collected all over everywhere, and we should have the reassurance that this is a valid way of going about the business there. Another problem is that this document wasn't available for public review, for council review, until the first week of June. That's a bad way of doing business, in my opinion. Everybody's rushing to see this document, get it read, and understand what's in there. And I think that unless people fully understand what's in there, it's a bad way of moving forward, voting something through that we don't know exactly what's there. As far as content issues, we've got problems with the data quality that went into this. This document, the analysis, is based on the past observer data that's available. And I understand that that's the best that we've got, but garbage in, garbage out. And if we've got weak information to start with, how can we have any confidence that the information that's coming out is any better than what went in the front side? I think that there should have been a discussion of that and the data quality that's in there. We also have a problem with the prioritization process, leaving the discretion to the regional administrator with consultation to the councils. We don't think that that's enough. There should be an established process, looking at the priorities that are identified by the councils, looking at things such as, first off, going to, for example, for protected species, things that are subject to overfishing or rebuilding, moving down to things that are governed by a hard tack. That there should be a stepwise set approach on how limited resources are allocated. And I don't think that the ambiguity that's in this document gets at that. So I have a simple request for the analysis that's in here is that this council move this back to the SSC for a review. These folks looked at it in its first incarnation but have not seen it in its current incarnation. We don't know whether the math holds water. And we'd like to just see that, go back to them for a simple review, make sure that everything in there is valid, come back at a later council meeting and move it forward. But moving forward right now, without that assurance is premature. We'd also like to see an alternative for a clear prioritization process established in there. Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you, Gibb. Jim O'Malley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim O'Malley. I, too, appreciate the amount of work that work of extraordinary quality that went into this, and I understand that there is a certain sense of urgency. But at the same time, I have to agree with the previous speaker, especially when it comes to things like industry-funded observer programs. I think there needs to be some discussion about whether there's going to be some tax that creates a pool or whether it's going to be the cost placed only upon that one vessel that has the observer. These are the kinds of things that I think we need to talk about. And the only thing that I would suggest beyond the suggestion that Mr. Brogan made was to perhaps have a joint meeting between the SSC and the Council Committee on this topic. I do think it's important to discuss some of these things, and I believe that we have the time this summer to spend at least an afternoon on this with those two bodies and members of the public who might be interested in getting a good chance to read the document, getting a good chance to ask a number of expert people some questions about it, and then coming back to the council with a recommendation so that the council might give an informed opinion to the agency. And I thank you very much.
Any further questions or council respond to what has been said by members of the audience? Okay, David?
Yeah, I just want to ask Mike again. I think he said that if there was a change in how funding had to be sought, that would be frameworked, that it would come back to the council.
Are you referring to the issue that Jim O'Malley just raised?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what would have to come through full development of all we've done in this document is provide the council's the framework adjustment mechanism to develop and implement that rather than requiring a full amendment as was required for the scallop plan to fully develop Amendment 13. So we've not established any industry-funded observer programs, but we've created the framework ability for the council to develop an industry-funded observer program, and through that development process determine whether there would be a tax set aside or shared cost or any other funding or set aside mechanisms that would be appropriate for the fishery.
Okay, so then basically both the public and the council would have adequate notice and a chance to comment should there be a change.
The council would have to develop it.
Right. So they would. That's why I'm trying to get on the record for the people that are concerned that there would be adequate time to comment on that. And to Gibb's point on the change in the recommendations of the math, I'm not sure it has to be reviewed by the SSC since it's their changes that they implemented, is I guess what I'm saying.
That's true. The math is what the SSC reviewed, and they made several minor technical changes to the math, and that those changes were made. What the importance filters were recommended by the SSC members as a policy, essentially implementation of the math, and so that's what was fully discussed by the committee in April was our proposed implementation of the SSC's recommendation. But again, that was a recommendation of the SSC to the councils to develop a policy call on how to utilize and refine what comes out of the math that they reviewed.
Right. So again, but to Gibb's point, that the math, in fact, is a byproduct of the review of the SSC. The changes, the importance filters, are what they recommended. All that's been done is that they have been implemented, and we are agreeing to that.
Okay, Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Considering Gibb's other point about if there is no funding available, the regional administrator develops the priorities and consults with the council. I see nothing that precludes the council from annually developing observer priorities that says basically takes a look at stocks and takes a look at where they want observer coverage as priorities in case there aren't enough funding. So we could develop a template that says as a matter of policy we want overfish stocks or forage-based or whatever we want to do. We could do that without having it in this plan, I would imagine.
All right. Thank you, Paul. Unless any council member objects, I'm going to call the question, and I see no objection. Therefore, all those in favor of the motion, please raise your hand. All right. Is there any opposition? One opposition. Any abstentions? Two abstentions. All right. The motion passes. Dana, do you have anything else to report from the committee?
I have nothing else to report, Mr. Chairman, but I would like to say that it's definitely been a pleasure working with this joint committee. It's been a very interesting process, and I want to commend the staff, Mike and company, because this is an extremely difficult piece of document that you have before you, and it has been a very smooth, short process, and everybody deserves a lot of credit. It was my pleasure to serve on this committee. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Dana. Compliments to Michael, to Nancy, and, of course, to Pat for all the work that they've done on this very extensive and comprehensive amendment. All right. Next item of business is other business. I would suspect that there is none, and I see no one raising their hand. Therefore, with no objection, this meeting will be adjourned. All right.